But it seems to me from what I've seen that in gentle parenting, you ask the child how they feel, or I don't know. let me not misspeak. Let me not misspeak about gentle parenting.
Okay. What? Hey, friend.
Hi, Valsi.
How are you?
Surviving. You know, I'm having a bad hair day. Can't talk about it.
That's okay. I think the same thing happened to me last week, so I totally understand. Welcome back in, everybody, to another episode of Friends on Friends. Today, we're going to have sort of a bit of a follow-up conversation to one of the previous episodes that we've recorded. The title of that episode was like critical questions or conversations everyone should have when they realize that their relationship is getting serious. And we got a comment on that episode, which I'll read out, saying that this is a great topic and one that is very relatable and the person would like to know our thoughts on critical conversations to have after a relationship is already serious and progressing to something more. And then there's like an example saying in blended families. And so we thought we'd give it a shot.
I'm looking at it as a single woman's perspective. What would I want my mindset to be? What are some of the things that I would want to talk about or would hope that I would know to talk about in that situation?
Fair enough. You want me to start or you want to go?
Go ahead, girl.
I knew you were going to say that. So, all right. Thinking about the blended families situation, I would want to have a discussion about advanced directives. I don't know if you know what that is. The advanced directives is appointing the healthcare proxy, but you can also include like certain things, certain specifics on there about like what your preferences would be in certain situations. So it is actually the document that tells the healthcare provider who should speak for you and what medical decisions they should make if you become unable to speak for yourself. And I think that that is incredibly important, specifically if you, just in general, but also specifically if you have a blended family, they ever ended up in a position where they're not able to make, you know, those type of decisions for themselves. Do you want to be intubated? If you're okay with that, you know, if it's long-term, do you want that? Like all those things, I think, which stuck to talk about, but I think it's important to have the conversation up front. So just so that you know, and then have it in writing so that that can then be provided as evidence that these are your wishes. And so you don't end up in a chaotic situation, unnecessarily.
That was one of the things that I also had. Mm-hmm. I had it stated a little bit differently. So I just said, what are your end of life wishes? And also primarily focusing on who do you want to appoint as your medical proxy? Because for me, for the past 4 years, I've probably had deaths in my family every year. And to have gone through that process, it was actually quite challenging because you're right. We start to have what I would call as noise discussions where we weren't able to focus on what was happening with our loved ones because we were hyper focused on who the proxy is. And as an example, like I went to the hospital with my grandma and I may have been asked something and I gave a particular direction based on conversation with certain people in my family. Mm-hmm. And then what would happen is, you know, they would be like, well, we're hearing from you, but are you the medical proxy? And somebody else would come into that discussion claiming to be the proxy and then giving an opposing direction. Yeah. And so I think it's really important to have those discussions, even though it might not be very comfortable.
The other thing that came to mind for me that is sort of in line with the advanced directives is, so if you are in a blended family and one person dies, and you've both brought kids into the relationship, how do you want to split the assets among your offspring? I think that you need to have that conversation and you need to have a legal binding document that clearly indicates how you want things to be split. Then from the little bit, I'm not a lawyer, obviously. But from the little bits of reading and research that I did, I understand that the best type of document to have in that situation is a trust, because a mm-hmm. will can be contested, but a trust is, and there are different types of trust, but a trust is a little bit more ironclad. And so it'll, like, if you state specifically, you know, how things should be split, you essentially end up avoiding what could be a very long, drawn out
probate process. Yeah.
Yeah, probate process. So, you know, it's however morbid that conversation might be, I think it's important. It's important to have upfront, so you avoid like the foolishness later on.
I think that that's something you should do, whether the family is blended or not. I had something similar. I sort of just grouped that as estate planning, mm-hmm. and especially for people who have substantial assets, mm-hmm. it's really, really critical in that point to have some sort of estate lawyer who can really tell you what's important to put in a trust or what to do or not to do or things to establish or not to establish. So I think my take was to get some sort of attorney and actually have a real conversation about estate planning so you know what's the best fit for you and your family situation.
I 100% agree. The next one that I thought about was if the relationship ended, would my partner be able to maintain a relationship with my son? And the reason I thought of that is because so currently my son's biological father is not involved in his life. And so I would imagine that a partner, no, like if I were mm-hmm. to, you know, be in a long-term relationship, be married or whatever, that person would most likely serve as a father figure to my child. And, you know, you've built this relationship over whatever amount of years. And mm-hmm. if for whatever reason it ended between us, would it impact the person's ability or, you know, whatever to maintain our relationship with my son, because technically he wouldn't be his biological father. And maybe that's all circumstantially. You probably wouldn't know what you would do in that situation, but I would want to have an idea of what that thought process was.
I mean, I think maybe it would also enter your mind to think about like what the rapport and relationship is between that person and your son.
I'm assuming it would be good
throughout the relationship. Because if for some reason, because you know how as kids become teenagers, they go cuckoo. And it may have been good, you know, throughout like when he was young. And then as he got to be teenager, maybe they were apart. I don't know. I'm just thinking about like how sometimes even in just not a blended family, but how relationships deteriorate between children and their parents as they age.
Sometimes, you know? Yeah. I'm just working off of the premise that
it's positive.
Yeah. I'm not thinking about things falling apart when he becomes a teenager or anything of that. I'm just working off of the premise that it is positive.
There was one thing that I thought about and I've always thought about in a blended family situation. And it came to me because of something that happened to me as a child. So I'll tell a short story time. I'll try to be like very, very short. So when I was younger and I was learning to spell my name, I'll never forget this experience because my godfather, who is also my cousin's dad, came to visit my cousin, and I was outside playing, and you know, he saw me and he just pulled me aside and said, spell your name. And at the time I was either like, I don't know, like 5 or 6, something like that. And my name has both my first and last name, for everyone to know, has together 18 letters. So at that 4, 5, 6 age, yes, I was learning how to spell my name, but baby, I did not know how to spell. I wasn't proficient. Okay. So he tried to ask me how to spell my name and I struggled, and he basically held me in an inquisition for about an hour plus. The one break I got, I tried to get away. I told him I need to use the bathroom and he said, okay. And I thought now after I used the bathroom that he would have gotten over it. No, he came back to me and said, you know, I was being drilled about learning how to spell my name. And my aunt then made a comment to my mom about it and said, you know, at the time I was going to prep school and she was like, you're sending your child to an expensive school. She can't spell her name. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what happened in terms of the conversation between my aunt and my mom, because obviously I was a child. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that incident happened on a Friday over the weekend when I was home with my mom, she proceeded to grill me throughout that weekend for me to learn how to spell my name. And every time I got a letter inaccurate or wrong, I definitely got some whoopings until I was able to spell my name properly by the end of the weekend. And for me as a child, I was just like, when is this over? So that made me think about that entire experience, made me think about if you have a blended family and the person who is the non-biological parent, how would you want that person to discipline your child? Would you ever want them to discipline your child at all? Or how would you deal with that?
I have so many feelings about that entire situation. And initially, it's, I think the, what comes up for me is anger. And that I would...
Me too.
I would not send you back. If I was your mother, I would not have sent you back to...
To my aunt's house.
To your aunt's house. Godfather, his position would be revoked. But then I have to pause for a minute and kind of put myself in your mom's shoes and wonder why that was the way she decided to handle the situation. And I can somewhat understand, sort of perhaps maybe feeling like,
called her out, like,
yeah, or pressured into the fact that, you know, this is the expectations of other people
being projected
on her,
especially because I was going to an expensive school.
Say this with the utmost respect. If you don't know any better, then I can understand that that's the way you would decide to proceed. To your original question, like, if there's a non-biological parent involved in a blended family situation, how do you go about disciplining, you know, the children? I don't know what the answer to that would be, because I can't tell you that I would be comfortable.
The first thing I thought about, and again, just thinking back to my own experience, right, is I would in today's world say to that individual, while I may not be certain about what I want you to do discipline wise, I can tell you what I'm certain I don't want you to do. So first of all, you will never lay a hand on my child. So that's number one.
That is a given for me also, but it's even the, like, you know, the talking.
Yes.
Like I'm trying.
Yes.
To-
well, and then maybe you could say, and I don't know, when I'm disciplining Johnny or whatever, whatever your child's name is. Okay. I never raise my voice to Johnny. Like, however you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So my expectation is that if you don't know that you can approach Johnny without raising your voice, keep it to yourself, sir.
Are you saying that generally? Because you're not applying that to me in real life, because you know I raise my voice, so I can't use that as an example.
No, I'm just saying, but okay. I'm using that as an example, like okay. Whatever tone you take to your child. Because, you know, in 2025, there is the gentle parenting approach that I'm not really very knowledgeable about, but it seems to me from what I've seen that in gentle parenting, you ask the child how they feel, or I don't know. Let me not misspeak. Let me not misspeak about gentle parenting. Okay.
What? Where you get that?
Well, like they ask them about their feelings and
I don't know about gentle parenting.
Let me not misspeak about gentle parenting. Whatever the approach is, like if that's how you parent or discipline your child, right? I would want to make sure that the partner is aware of what my parenting approach has been. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want you to deviate from that when speaking to my child.
If I'm being 100% honest, I don't know. I just don't know. It is a conversation worth having, but I don't know what I'd be okay with. And I do know what I'd not be okay with. And you could start there, but I think it's equally important to kind of give them directions on what's okay as well. As well as what's not okay.
Yes, 100%.
Last one I have on my list that I could think about was, you know, what the expectations or what would my spouse's ideal life look like after retirement? Because there will come a point where the kids are going to fly the nest and, you know, we are like winding down. We have more years behind us than we probably do ahead. and just an idea of what that life, what the ideal life would look like for them. For us, try to make that, try to work towards what that would be. Yeah, try to work towards it, you know.
So what I had thought about, and again, maybe I just watched too many novelas or something. But I thought about being brave enough to have a conversation about any children that are not presently in your life. And I thought about that because there have been situations where an individual has a child that nobody knows about. And so now they have passed away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, people who are like that generally are not clear with their assets. And then you have this person who comes out of nowhere. Mr. Joe was also my dad. And I'm also entitled to his assets, especially if, again, a will, a trust, mm-hmm. none of those things were established. I just think that if you're going to be in a long-term relationship with somebody or mm-hmm. marriage, whatever it might be, that you should be honest with yourself mm-hmm. and also be willing to be honest with them about all the things, including a child that maybe you, or if you have a child that they're just not in your life, mm-hmm. right? So you mentioned that your son's biological father is not really in his life. Mm-hmm. If later, you know, he got into a relationship and he never talked about this child. And that's then one day,
no.
I mean, to you, you may not.
I don't care.
Like, whatever. If for some reason, you know what I mean? You never know. Sometimes things change over time as people get older. Mm-hmm. And if his person is like, who is this child? I never knew about them or whatever. So just being honest about that and having those conversations.
So your thing is being brave enough to ask the question, is there anything that I should know? Do you have any, you know, is there a possibility that you have an offspring, or are you for sure, or are you certain rather, that there is an offspring out in the world? Being brave enough to ask that question
and also being brave enough to answer it.
Okay. Fair enough.
And honest enough to answer it. Yeah.
And then if the answer is yes, what are you going to do?
I'm not married.
Well, you thought of it. So I'm like, if the person says, yes, I do, you know, I'm so glad you asked. I've been wanting to tell you this before. Yeah, for ages.
So, and thank you for asking. Yeah. Oh, wow.
What would you do?
You know, what would I do? In reality, I don't know what I would say. I think I would be stunned and maybe half resenting the fact that I asked the question to begin with. Or maybe take it as an opportunity to, you know, create an environment that welcomes that individual. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it does happen. I could tell you.
I'm not saying that it doesn't. That's, you know, that's tough. That is very tough.
Okay. So then the next thing that I thought about is actually having a conversation about, and forgive me if I'm not being articulate in the way that I say this, but having a conversation about how you will maintain your marriage. And what I mean by that is talking about having marriage counseling. A lot of people assume that marriage counseling is something that you do when there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. And I actually think it's valuable to have marriage counseling throughout your marriage, even when there isn't a problem to fix, because it sets you up to be able to be articulate and to speak calmly to each other, or to work through when an actual problem arises, because you've been doing the work throughout the marriage. And especially in the Black community or the minority community, people think about having a therapist or things like that as silly or not something that is necessary. Mm-hmm. But I actually think that there are a lot of amazing tools that a therapist can actually impart on a couple mm-hmm. to help them to become closer, and to also to help them to create scenarios where they can talk through an issue respectfully.
I agree. I mean, I think therapy is great. I would add to that that not only do therapy, like marriage counseling or whatever, I would add that each individual should probably do therapy separately as well. I think it's super beneficial. You know, men are harder to see the benefit. Yes. And this is I'm generalizing, of course, but Yeah, you know, men are harder to, it's more difficult, I think, to convince them to seek help. Mm-hmm. So what would you do, or what do you think you would do in the event where you bring that up and say like, hey, like this is, you know, I think that, well, once you can't force him to do the individual stuff, but even the couple stuff, if he says like, no, I'm not doing it, or I don't want to, what would your, do you know what you would do or say to kind of get him to agree?
I'm not sure, but what I would say is, I guess I would take the approach. I watched this dating guru, and the way that he positioned things sometimes, actually, I think it's really intelligent. And so one of the things he was saying was that at the beginning of a relationship, you should always play into the power that you have at that time. Mm-hmm. Because when you're just getting to know somebody, they're probably more inclined to be open to different things. And they want to, they like you, right? So they want to make you happy. So they're more inclined to do things that you ask. And so I think knowing that and agreeing with that, I would probably bring up something like marriage counseling or all of that at a point in the relationship where it's early, where I have your attention and I also have some influence or some ability to persuade you and start to create comfortability with it then. So that by the time we would get to the marriage phase, you already know that that's something that I would be for and about. So yeah, guys, this is just the perspective of two modern single women and what we would think of if we were in a long-term relationship or in a marriage. We'd love to hear from you in the comments to see if you agree with what we said, if there are other things that we didn't think of that you guys thought of. And also, if you thought this conversation was useful, we want to thank our subscriber so much for the comment and for sparking the conversation. And I'm also thankful that they trusted us to actually have such a discussion, especially since we're not married. So thank them very much. And until next time, bye guys.
Bye.